This is New Home Insights, the John Burns Real Estate Consulting Podcast. I'll be your host, Dean Worley. As the title promises, we're going to bring you insights into everything housing. Latest trends, innovations, observations, and issues of the day. We'll bring in colleagues here at John Burns and also some major industry players from all across the country. This podcast is going to be quick, fun, but also hopefully make you think. So see you here every couple of weeks. Now let's get to it. Welcome to the New Home Insights Podcast of John Burns Consulting. I'm your host, Dean Worley. Today, we're going to discuss home design. Really, what we're going to talk about is kind of the importance of design in the new home world, you know, in the process. But more importantly, I think, is the power of design. How, if you do it right, can design stand out from those more clearly fundamental factors or sort of historically fundamental factors like price and location that we usually think of as kind of carrying the load in the buyer decision-making process. And to help me do that, and by help, I mean to actually do everything, I have Matt Sauls and Megan Elteringham in with me today. Say hi, guys.
Hey, how are you?
Hello, how are you?
Let's start with Matt. I'm gonna introduce Matt. He is the Vice President of Marketing and Product Development for Party Homes in their Inland Empire division. That's in Southern California. He guides the company's marketing, advertising, and product design strategies, and is responsible for strategic marketing planning and implementation for active and future communities in master plans. That's Matt. Megan serves as Corporate Vice President of Marketing for the New Home Company. She's also based in Southern California, but she's responsible for integrated marketing campaigns and brand management standards across all divisions in Southern California, Northern California, and Arizona. And she's been doing this for, I think, over 15 years. Do I have that right, Megan?
Yes, you sure do.
Okay, good. I didn't say 50.
You left out in my bio that I want to be Megan whenever I grow up because she is somebody that's a powerhouse for sure.
Oh, thank you, Matt. I feel the same way about you.
There's been a lot of adulation going on this morning so far in our prep work. You listeners, just be aware of that. So
yeah, definitely.
Let's talk about design. Let's talk sort of first principles in design. Where, in your experience, does design come in kind of that community assessment process? By that, I mean, you know, the go or no go decision. How early does design enter into your internal decision-making process?
Well, I think every site has its own unique characteristics, site or location. And so in some cases, you know, design is not always just how beautiful something looks. You know, sometimes design could be about what is the process to make sure that you create something that works from a financial standpoint. So I think it has to be at the very forefront of the discussion. I know we discuss it when we're looking at a piece of land. How do we fit within the target market, but also how do we make sure that we have an opportunity to do something special that can create additional revenue opportunities as well. And I think you can do that at any price point whenever you're looking at a site.
Megan, how about you folks?
I think absolutely. The New Home Company has always prided themselves in, you know, our design. And like Matt said, it's not always just about the design of the product, but it's also the land that we're selecting. And a lot comes into that play in terms of lot sizes and architectural guidelines that what the market will really bear as a sales price and, you know, those key factors that really dictate the design choices. We have a recent example of a Sky Ranch in Covenant Hills in California. And we had pretty strict architectural guidelines for exterior elevations. And we had talked through that if that project made sense to us, because although, you know, working with incredibly talented architects on that project, we had a lot of pressure to on our directs to produce what the master developer was requiring. So I think it really has, the design absolutely influences what we do, but we also have to look at, you know, the kind of the financial impact of that.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. How important is design in that early process in the sense, I mean, would you actually say no to a piece of land based on design considerations?
We have, absolutely.
How about you, Matt?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we operate in an area where cost is very sensitive. And I think that build cost and directs are always a sensitivity for us. But, you know, like Megan said, I think one of the things that makes companies like the New Home Company and Pardee as a part of the Tri Point Group is we start with the philosophy of trying to do something that's better than our competition, and really delivering something from a design standpoint that will excite the buyer. And so, you know, because of that, we may not be driving down to the ultimate bottom line number. We may say we're going to spend a little bit more money, but we have to get it back. And so there are times where when we compete against somebody who might be a public builder that is all about directs, then we aren't able to buy that site. And we find that's okay because we believe in the end, we have a fundamental premium delivery that we want to create at any price point. And if that doesn't tie in with the value of the land, then we will pass.
So is that maybe why you guys, because you guys mostly play in the first move up, kind of second move up new home space. Is that in part, it sounds like maybe in large part, driven by your design and your sort of demanding design specifications?
Well, us in the Inland Empire, you know, we are already a, you know, what I would consider to be an affordable market. And so, you know, within that, we offer products from 300,000 to 550,000. So we're anywhere from first time move up, very little luxury for us. I know that Megan spends a lot more time in that area. We as an overall company do that, but in our region specifically, we have to find ways to, even at lower price ranges, to create great design so that we can still get a revenue premium. And so that could be a more modern take on the elevation styles that people are familiar with, where we're using materials that are still cost effective, but give a look that looks different. And just, you know, the way that we design the interior of the home for large open spaces and windows, those are all elements that we think even at affordable price ranges, you can still drive a better experience for the buyer.
Megan, are you assessing then at this very, very early stage, are you assessing that connection of potential buyer, your buyer pool, your buyer segments that that piece of land is likely to appeal to and how that intersects with design at that earliest stage?
We do. Before we look at any piece of land, we have internal focus groups, and we might have them with our own employees or out in the market. And then we get all of our consultants that we think that we want to work with on a specific project in a room. And it's a very collaborative effort. And we kind of talk about what our key points are and where we see this project going. You know, everyone thinks of the New Home Company as high end, but we had two projects in Rancho Mission Viejo, Azura and Cobalt. And we were written up in the press for having, you know, a very moderately priced one bedroom condo for, you know, $350,000. And it was really important for us. And so when we sat down with the architect and the landscape architect and with RMV, we really talked about, you know, what's appealing to the buyer? What are we hearing out in the public? And it's all about affordability. And so it was very important for us to design something that would be capable of really that acceptance of the public. And it really did leaps and bounds for us as a company. And I think we were able to add fresh and modern architecture. And we had an incredible landscape architect on that architect and also interior design firm that I was able to really show, you know, these highly amenitized interiors that really would stand out from our competitors. I think the important thing is to do something well, and you don't always have to be selling, you know, $2 million product, but really just getting everyone in the same room with the same ideas and really having a common goal.
That leads actually kind of, okay, so next question is this. Let's take a different tack here. Where do you see design ranking? Be as honest as you possibly can. I know you guys are designanistas. I just made that word up. Trademark me just now.
I like it.
Yeah.
Like it. Hashtag.
Hashtag designanista. Not sure how to spell it.
I just bought the URL already.
Damn it.
Don't worry about the domain. It's already done.
I'll get .net. So how important is design in that in the process? Where do you think it ranks among the buyers out there you're trying to attract?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's not something necessarily that they're going to tell you, but we've seen that by creating great design, we're going to sell faster and for more revenue. And you know, that's the internal discussion we always have as marketers and design leaders within our group. You know, you're in a company where you're surrounded by people who, you know, you have purchasing folks and construction folks who, you know, are really tasked with driving to the bottom line. And we're more tasked with balancing out bottom line plus driving revenue growth. And so that's always the internal discussion within us. But, you know, I can demonstrate often, and we do in new communities where we've taken that next step, trying to be forward looking in design, that we have a tendency to sell at a faster absorption pace. And if you can sell at a faster absorption pace, you're going to have a lower cost of sales, just always going to be the case. Once we start building inventory in any community, then we fall behind. And so there's a tail to every community where absorption drops. And, you know, if you can get out front of the competition and lead that charge with something new and fresh, the buyers are going to pay you for it.
So, let's think about it this way. How do you sell design, if that's the right word, against what we kind of prefaced here at the very beginning, against those classic, you know, the price of the home, what people are the schools that you're in, the specifics of the location. How do you get design to sort of stand out among those kinds of core considerations?
Well, I'd say, Matt, is it okay if I take this one?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think also it's a combined effort with your marketing. And obviously Matt and I are in that world. And I think it's really important to highlight in your model homes what kind of sets you apart, and also just your marketing efforts to to the public. And I feel like what people want, and I always struggle with this because, and it's a very good question of, do we get the bang for our buck of spending the extra money to design and work with, you know, exceptional architects and really design to what we're hearing in our focus groups, what people want? You know, does it come down to where it's just the bottom line of, it can the buyer afford it? And I think if you always look at it as a combined effort, that the design, you never compromise design for price. And that's kind of what we founded our company on, is that we want to make sure that we are always known in the industry as that we design very well, but also keep in mind that it has to, you know, pan out with the affordability factor. And I think you can have both, but I think you need to share that message. I think you need to, like I said, you know, I mentioned that one bedroom condo in Orange County. It's like, well, let's work with our PR and get that, you know, that communication piece out there and really highlight that we're taking into consideration that design is important and we are listening to the public, but also doing it at a fair price.
And if I could add, you know, you asked specifically about how do you translate that value. One of the things that we do with every neighborhood is, you know, and I'm fortunate to be driving the product design side. So I'm on the consumer side my whole career, but I'm also plugged in enough to understand the financial side. And so as we go through that process, and then, you know, we fight to deliver something that is better than, let's say, our competition or a high level of design, we are very intentional about bringing in our sales team, especially the ones that are going out there that are customer facing, and we walk them through prior to opening with the marketing and design teams and even the creative teams, like Megan said, the architect and the interior designers. We walk them through the story of every home, how we thought through what we designed, who we were targeting. And even down to the level, which, you know, a lot of people do this, it's not groundbreaking, but you have to be intentional about it. We have a story for every home and who lives in that home and how they use it. And it ties back to the target market. And so we convey that information to the sales team. The sales team then feels empowered to share about what really went behind that, whether it be a new direction or a more modern take on a Frank Lloyd Wright inspired design. They have those tools in their belt to begin to present those to the customer to define why we think we should get more value for that great design.
Yeah, so you will actually make sure that your sales staff is ready to tell the story, tell the design, and sort of highlight that design, even if the folks are coming in just asking, what's the price?
We have a specific meeting prior to opening where we download the team on all of this. We do a comprehensive walk of the models and the story behind every single community. Absolutely.
For both of you guys, do you guys have any kind of policy on that your sales agent needs to walk each prospect through the models or just kind of let them roam? Just curious.
Well, are you asking what we'd like them to do or what they do?
Both, actually.
And I think this is probably amongst all our home builder friends. Absolutely, we want our salespeople spending time with them in the sales office, but really having them experience the home and being able to pinpoint, like Matt was saying, specific design elements throughout the home that, you know, that the home builder chose to include. It doesn't always happen. And it, you know, in all fairness, sometimes it's you have a busy sales office and you can't take, you know, prospective buyers through all the homes. But best practice for us would be absolutely to really have someone experience the homes with the salesperson so they can share all those tidbits with them.
But it becomes a trade-off though, doesn't it? In that, you know, if you have, even if you have two agents, let's say, if they're both out with someone, you now have a unmanned sales office and that has drawbacks itself.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's probably a different podcast, but, you know, we work really, really hard to funnel people into an appointment process. Yeah. And so generally speaking, most of our time is spent with a customer who's as close to the buying purchase decision as possible when they are coming through an appointment process. And so that could be an hour to an hour and a half. And so they're going to get the attention that they need for the person who's as close to buying as possible.
It sounded, I could be confused. Megan, tell me if you heard it too. It sounds like Matt is trying to get on a second podcast, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. He's selling himself right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. All right.
I'm actually angling for a co-host. I don't know if you heard that.
Okay.
Really in my statement.
Okay. Well,
I heard you make a lot doing this.
Oh yeah. The extra podcast money that doesn't exist.
I had another little point on that one. I think, you know, we always look about, you know, how is the interaction right now in the sales office and how is that going to change? And again, this could be another future podcast of, you know, really how are we buying and selling our homes? But I really think there might be an interesting way of, you know, allowing the consumer to experience the home quite possibly, you know, maybe on their own and being able to walk through a home and kind of viewing everything on their own and, but having prompts, you know, what about some virtual reality prompts that people can share? I mean, I think the world's our oyster with kind of technology of where it's going. We're doing a lot of research on what does the buyer want? Do they want to be followed around by a salesperson or do they want to experience it on their own? You know, and how can we prompt them with, you know, the design elements or features in the home that we want to share with them? But there's some really interesting points that can kind of come out of, you know, the whole sales experience.
Yeah, there is. It's not the virtual reality, but it's the enhanced reality or something like that, where you have a program on, you can do it on your cell phone. And as you walk through the space, like you said, prompts and information will come up and you'll, that's something that I think folks are going to do in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How about in terms of, would you even find design, we're going back to this, the fundamentals, right? One of the fundamentals, let's say it's schools. Let's say you don't have really good schools. Would you rethink that piece of land and use design to maybe change the buyer profile, change the folks you're trying to attract, like you have bad schools? Can we use design to maybe go after empty nesters or something like that, that you may, even if the location seems like it was going to be a family-oriented location, would you go that far?
Yeah, I think that the market is already going to be going there. You know, I think it's hard for us to completely change the tone of what's going on. But like you said, if there are schools that are a challenge, inherently, you're probably going to find a consumer that isn't as interested in schools as being a primary decision factor. So really, I think, Dean, it's more about being in tune with what that local market is. And as Megan said earlier, we use a lot of tools to find our way there. We use tools that give us quantitative information on demographics and psychographics. We go out on site and we just see what's out there. You know, I think I know coming up through my research background, even as we did consumer research, said go to the grocery store and see who's in the grocery store. I mean, it's as basic as that. But you have to, you know, you can sit in a room and look at a computer and download reports. but you got to go out and kick tires. None of that has really changed, and to get a feel for it. And so I think that we are filling the need. I don't know. It's hard sometimes to just create the need.
So I'm going to have to skip ahead to a question then that kind of that segues to that. So how do you test for, and Megan, you spoke about this a little bit earlier as well. How do you test for designs at any given community? It's, you know, consumer data, focus groups, talking to your sales agents, et cetera. Take us through that process a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think, what I had mentioned before is that we, every single project that we do, we rely on these focus groups, and we'll have elevation styles, and, you know, we put them up, you know, we put them up on the board, and we have dots, and people come out and we kind of have them go through the area and say, you know, put the, your favorite red dot on your specific elevation that you kind of respond to. And so we right then and there know in terms of architectural style, what people are gravitating towards. We also go through that with the floor plans and kind of share areas of where we thought we were creative and creating a, you know, a storage space or, you know, a next gen unit attached. And does that really read through, you know, just because what we're reading, like what Matt was saying, I mean, we read reports after reports with demographic data and all this qualitative research, but does it really make sense when you're actually talking to potential home buyers? So we really take pride in that. And really kind of go down that path and, you know, and maybe it's not one focus group. Maybe you start developing the product and then you have an, you know, an, a subsequent focus group to really just really gather that information, because honestly, we've found that when we don't do that, it really ends up kind of biting us. And you know, you get surprised with things that when you're in sitting in a room and, you know, you're all together thinking like this is the best idea. But when you're really talking to, you know, the people that are going to be living there, boots on the ground. And like Matt said, I think that's the best advice to, you know, stand in a grocery store and you can see these different people and how they're living and how they're talking and who the demographic is. I think that all really helps in terms of, you know, really how you're designing your product.
That's a great point. I remember 100 years ago, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but we used to use Starbucks as kind of a sort of a proxy, like, oh, this is a, you know, there's some upscaleness to this area. Quickly, that was no longer true. So now it's kind of like, oh, is there a Whole Foods nearby? That tells us something about the demographics. Is that what you mean, Matt, a little bit when you said grocery stores?
Yeah, I mean, I know somebody that actually works for me that says that she will travel only where there's a Whole Foods. And you know, that's very important to her. Now, where she lives and where we operate is two different things. We're not in an area where a Whole Foods exists, but it might be some other retailer like you described, or it might be some proximity to amenities that are interesting to them. I'll give you an example. Our new 55 plus community, we spent probably 2.5 years doing research for Altus in Beaumont, which is a 700 unit active adult community. And it's almost like you know, I think sometimes we get lazy in our business and we go, oh, we've done something like this before, so we'll just do it like the way we did before. And what's nice about sometimes whenever you go into a new category, it forces you back to your fundamentals. And so we went through a whole high level of, we did demand studies and with John Burns, and we went down into, we looked at consumer insights information with your company. Then we went even narrower than that, and it forced us to go through these steps and these disciplines to get down to a consumer profile that we thought we would target for our branding. And then we had enough of a long enough lead time to get in front of it and actually interact with our potential consumers, bring them in, have meetups, talk to them about our products and what the community would be like. And we've made adjustments because of that. And that was all before we opened or sold one home. Usually we lack that discipline to try to do that because we're running as fast as possible. Yeah. But if we can do that, we can have a more informed and a better design and a better process.
Yeah. Have you ever had a flat out, either one of you ever had a flat out miss? That is, and I've seen that, I won't say the builder, it's a few years ago, but where they were designing for what they thought was going to be sort of empty nester move down buyers. They actually got a ethnic concentrated family buyer just because of the schools that they didn't do their research on, 100% different. And they had to quickly do what little bit of surface, kind of superficial redesign they could do. Has that ever happened to you guys or something like that?
Never to Megan. No way.
Yes. Yeah. We actually have Yeah, never to the new home company. Yeah. We actually have a project that is selling right now that has had that kind of journey. And it was all, you know, we did a ton of research, but, and even the master developer thought, you know, we had it all dialed in. And then when we went to market, the sales price just wasn't being accepted by the buyer profile and who we thought was going to live there, because they were single level, you know, quite large homes. We thought empty nesters would be all about it. And unfortunately, because the price was so high, even though we thought they would want to live within the community and be close to their grandkids, it just didn't work. And we're having to redesign the product. And I think, you know, we'll end up having a really profitable and productive, you know, next phase two. But I think, you know, that was something that we did do our research and we drank the Kool-Aid, and so did the master developer and the master marketer. And it was just a big fail. It doesn't discount that it was incredible architecture. It doesn't discount that we had incredible interiors, but the price, you know, it does come down to, you know, back to our original conversation about that price. It has to be a dual approach, and it can't just be about the design if the price is indicative of something that's just too expensive for the demand.
That's a great point. It's a little bit chicken and eggy, isn't it? In that if you don't know who you're designing for, it's very difficult to do the right design. And you can have beautiful designs, but just have a little bit of a miss on that potential buyer profile.
Exactly. And we can have a second, I'll give you another example that's weirdly the opposite of what Megan just described. And sometimes you're lucky. So we designed some fairly large family-oriented designs, houses that went up to almost 4,000 square feet, two stories. We assumed these are going to be your bread and butter families. And so we've sold extremely well. And then as we began to dig into who the buyers were, they were actually empty nesters and retirees. And so logically you're going, why are they climbing stairs? This doesn't seem to be something that would be for them. But what we found is that the schools were probably a slightly higher negative than we anticipated. And so again, like to your earlier point, schools didn't matter as much. But what we had done is for that area, we had done a much higher level of design for the product. And because they had discretionary income and they appreciated the design, they were willing to pay for it. And so the community has sold very well, just not to who we thought would sell.
That's interesting. The example I said from a few years ago, they also sold well, just not to who they thought they were. Families were buying them in droves because of those great schools, even though the design wasn't quite right for them. Let's end with this last question. And how do you use design to sort of for any kind of strategic value? I guess what I mean by that is things like, do you help it segment product within a master plan or differentiate between neighborhoods or, you know, home size and things like that? Can you use design for those kinds of things?
Could you explain it a little bit more?
Can you use like say you have a master plan, and you know, traditionally a master plan is differentiated by lot size, right? Oh, you have your 4,000 square foot lots, your fives, your sixes, maybe by home size as well. Kind of those core fundamental factors. Can you use design elements to further segment or further differentiate yourself from the competition beyond just home size, lot size?
Got it. Yeah. So I would absolutely say yes. And I'm kind of very interested in this, you know, kind of pushing the parameters of how people are living today. So when we speak of design, we usually always talk about, okay, is it a single level or a single level with a pop-up or a two-story home? Do we have a next-gen component? You know, is there storage? Is there a launch area? But I'm kind of looking further into it of, you know, how do people live right now? And is there an opportunity as people become more working on more of the remote side? How do we create spaces where they can have an area for an office, but really a fully functioning office that is connected to the house, but really, you know, serves as its separate area so that when people are working from home, that they can go to that space, but then also feel like when they're done with work, they're still home and they can re-enter that way. And then what about wellness? I mean, I think we're in this area of, if you are working from home, do you have those areas where you can, you know, go and get a good workout in, you know, working with, you know, different brands, all these amazing brands out there, Peloton and The Mirror, where they're really pushing that you don't have to go to a gym anymore to work out, that you can have these spaces in your home. And so I'm kind of really interested in kind of going that route of how can we make these homes, you know, the 21st century, like what else can we be doing to be more creative of our approaches instead of just, you know, relying on the normal status quo. And I think that will add value and create value for us as we kind of explore this next step into that arena.
Yeah. How about big picture, like in terms of, say you have a neighborhood that's going to be a very similar lot and home size in the same master plan, or maybe it's your main competitor in that same competitive market area. Would you be able to use design to differentiate yourself, and how so?
Well, yeah, this is the world we live most of the time. I would say that probably 75% of the neighborhoods that we build are within our own master plan, and different than many other builders. We don't sell the lots typically. And so we're having anywhere from 4 to 6 segments that we have to support within that neighborhood. And just to your point, so what we always talk about is usually there's an inflection point where affordability drives the design decisions versus where revenue maximization drives the design decisions. And every market is going to be slightly different, and every project. But, you know, you have to find that inflection point where buyers are willing to pay for design, and you have to understand where that is in your local market. Where we do hit that inflection point, that's where we look for opportunities to do a lot of the things that Megan was just describing, to help differentiate beyond the lot size. How can you create a space that saves them money in a different place and allows them to pay more for my home, keeps them from having to go pay for the gym membership. We try not to think of every room as just another office or a den, and we don't merchandise that way often. We're thinking about how they work, how they live, you know, for those future homeowners like Megan awesome. Described.
And I think too, to add on to that, I mean, you make a good point, Matt. Obviously, when you're in these master plans, you have spaces where they're now putting bars, you know, part of the master development, and or they'll have, you know, large gyms. And so they're trying, as a master, they're really trying to incorporate where you don't need to leave at all, leave where you live. And I think that's kind of those next steps of how we're seeing, you know, how people are kind of conducting business and not having to go anywhere. They can kind of be in their own space. And so I think as not only home builders, but, you know, master developers, how are we differentiating ourselves and creating spaces for people to really just stay and play and live all in the same space?
That's actually that big. So maybe your next master plan, your slogan can be, "You will never leave." and it's kind of scary like
we'll
that.
We'll be
too.
Watching you.
That's good. I think that'll be tremendous success. Well, okay, Megan and Matt, thank you guys so much for joining us and helping me. In fact, again, as I said before, actually doing this whole treatise on design. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's been a blast.
Say bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
It was great.
Thank you guys.
Bye, Megan.
Thank you guys.
Bye, Matt.
You guys are awesome. So, okay. Thank you guys for listening. You listeners, please listen to us next time. This has been Dean Worley for New Home Insights Podcast. See ya.